Hi, Steve Artimer here, and welcome to the New Life Live podcast. We hope to provide help and hope in your life through God's Word, counselors, and psychologists as we answer questions from listeners who call with the challenges of life. Let's go to today's episode.
Welcome to New Life Live. I am Dr. Alice Benton. I have the pleasure of being here with Mark Cameron and JJ West. And if you folks didn't know, Mark Cameron is basically our resident expert on attachment styles. And so if you've heard about the material from Mylan and Kay Yurkovich's book, How We Love, he is the one to talk to about it. And JJ West runs our Every Man's Battle Intensive and our podcast, and he has great expertise on helping families struggling with addiction. And he's going to share with us a bit about that today. JJ?
Well, thanks, Alice. So glad to be on. And, you know, the thing that I've been thinking about lately is the Serenity Prayer. We oftentimes will refer to the Serenity Prayer at the Every Man's Battle Intensive. And part of the power of the Serenity Prayer is this acceptance. You know, we're all pretty familiar with the first part of the prayer where it says, God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We're not nearly as familiar with the second part of the prayer, which says to living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardship as the pathway to peace, taking as Jesus did this sinful world, not as it is, not as I would have it. That's a real challenge. And I didn't even read the whole thing, but that one line right there, taking this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it to be. Boy, that there's so many things that happen in life, these unexpected disappointments. I walked into my office this morning, and there was clearly a dead animal that had been caught over the weekend. Ooh. And we're in Florida, and it's summertime already. And it was obvious that this animal had been caught, and not only caught, but killed. Unexpected disappointment. How do you roll with those things? Mm-hmm. When we tend to demand that this world go as I would have it to go, that so often leads to addictive behaviors, because this world doesn't go as I would have it to go, and I want an escape from this world. I don't want to accept it as it is. I want it to be what I want it to be. And so part of our healing process, part of our ability to move out of addiction and into recovery, is learning to accept the hardships of life, accept this world as it is, not as I would have it to be. It's a big challenge, and we can't do it alone.
Yeah, I love that, JJ. There's a saying that says, acceptance is the answer to all of your problems. And that's not the complete answer, but it's the first step to all of our problems. Yeah. And sometimes I will see people who do struggle with acceptance, and I'll try and explain the difference between having a wishing mindset and a hope mindset. And people who have this wishing mindset, their internal thoughts are, I wish you hadn't done that, or I wish this hadn't happened. And usually that kind of mindset leads to this inability to be able to accept what has happened. Whereas a hope mindset can be more of an internal voice saying, like, I would have hoped you wouldn't have done that. But then an acceptance follows that is the reality. And once we accept the reality, then we can know the next step for how to tackle our problem.
I think memorizing the Serenity Prayer was one of the first strategies I used in dealing with my own anxiety, whether it's addiction or anxiety or just the problems we face in life. That serenity, that acceptance, and figuring out, what do I have the power to do something about, and what do I just have to allow to take place, because I'm not the one that can change it, but God, come on in and do what I cannot do. Thank you so much for that teaching, JJ. And JJ will be leading our Every Man's Battle Intensive on May 17th in Washington, D.C. We still have room, and so you can call to reserve your place there. We'll be right back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
I'm Steve Arterburn with a New Life Moment. I recently read about a man who was arrested at a hospital where he went to get treatment for a serious animal bite on his leg. Why was this insult added to the man's injury? That's where the case gets interesting. The man claimed the bite was from a pit bull, but authorities discovered it was really from a 10-foot-long, 450-pound Siberian tiger he was keeping as a pet in his apartment. To make matters even worse, the man had a 6-foot-long alligator roaming around the apartment as well. Does this strike you as bizarre, irresponsible, perhaps even a bit insane? Well, it should, but I plead for your consistency here. Don't we too often treat sin, a threat ultimately more dangerous to us than a tiger or alligator, with similar nonchalance? Come visit me, Steve Arterburn, at newlife.com for helpful advice on how to counter the danger of sin. Thanks for listening to this New Life Moment.
Welcome back to New Life Live. This is Dr. Alice Benton, and Steve's teaching there makes me just think of how we also omit pertinent information when we're asking for help, but we don't reveal all the facts, often because we're ashamed of it and we're not yet ready to be totally honest. But getting honest is part of the necessity if we want healing eventually. Thank you for that teaching, Steve. We're going to the calls, and we get to talk to Brandon calling from Medford, Oregon. He listens to us on Sirius XM. Hi, Brandon. Welcome to the show. How can we help you today?
Well, I appreciate the help. Appreciate the talk about that prayer a little while ago, too. I think that was instructive for me, just to start. But anyway, I have two questions. One's kind of embedded in a larger question, but kind of the first question is, I have a father who, at the end of life, you know, he doesn't want to live in a care facility. I don't think he feels comfortable having his children take care of him, which is unfortunate. And he's got a significant other right now that he's living with, and her health isn't the greatest. And if she passes on, he's indicated that, you know, he's going to follow on her heels because he doesn't want to, like, live without her. And before that, a few years ago, before he met her, he had a little dog that was sick, and he told us the same thing about the little dog. Unfortunately, he met this lady friend before the dog passed. And I'm just wondering how to deal with that before something like that happens, and afterwards, if it does. I think there's a fairly good likelihood it could happen, unfortunately, and it frankly kind of makes me feel sad that myself and my brother and our children don't matter enough for him to stick around. I guess, and how it plays in the bigger question being, seems like I have, you know, quite a few of these sorts of issues, and, you know, I'm older, and I kind of feel like it's, I told your screener, I told her, I kind of feel like it's skunk smell. I can't get off of me. And so, I feel like I'll, you know, be in therapy for the rest of my life and be like the widow with the issue of, not the widow, but the lady with the issue of blood in the Bible, who spent all of her life savings on doctors and never found any relief. So, that's my question.
Oh, Brandon, these are overwhelming issues that you're dealing with. And for your father to have been talking about suicidality, basically, for quite some time here, you're up against a lot, and you may feel like you have really limited power in how to manage this. So thank you for the courage to call and ask the question. Mm-hmm. Have any of you offered your father help, and is he at all open to counseling?
We've offered to be there for him and be helpful in many ways, but I almost kind of feel like it's sometimes like, well, almost like we were being manipulated. Like, oh, nobody cares about me. And so we showed up to talk to him to convey our love and show him that he mattered. And then he was like, oh, well, that's very nice. But, And then it's like, well, everything's fine now because now I have, you know, this significant other in my life, and which was a blindsided thing. It was something we didn't even know about. And, you know, here he is talking about taking his life. So it's kind of, I don't know, it was a little bit confusing.
Mm-hmm. So he's sometimes withdrawn and he omits information from you, but then he'll make these big statements for help and yet still stay emotionally withdrawn from you.
That's right. Uh-huh. And then my reason for calling was he wants to have like an hour-long conversation where he can ask me stuff and I can ask him things. And, you know, I'm trying to prepare for that because I think this might be part of that conversation. And, I just want to be prepared. And, frankly, I'm a little bit fearful of it just because they're hard conversations.
Mark, what are you thinking?
Brandon, is your dad a believer?
He claimed to be at one time. Mm. I would say now he would disavow that. That's another thing, of course, that's even more concerning.
Yeah. So it sounds like you're starting the stages of grief. It sounds like your dad is starting the stages of grief, too, with his partner or with his spouse who is at the end of her life. I think that's what you said, right, that he has a spouse or a partner who's at the end of her life. And
yeah, they're both in their mid-80s, he's in decent health, although he has just been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and I don't know what stage. And then you know, he wants to outlive her so he can care for her. Her health is not as good.
Yeah, and so when we get to... So I used to work in dialysis, and so I've seen a lot of patients pass away, and my wife used to be a nurse in the ICU, and so I've heard a lot of stories from her, too. And as we get toward the end of life, you know, we start to reflect back on the meaning of our lives, and especially as we get older, people do feel lonely, and I'm hearing that you're saying that your dad feels lonely when you're saying, you know, he would make those statements and then you'd come and visit him. And so, you know, really toward the end of life, it's more about the purpose is about having companionship. But the body also does get tired, and oftentimes we will see that when one person's lifelong partner dies, that person will die not too long after that. And I had a medical doctor actually explain to me, there's a medical condition, but the looser term is somebody dying of a broken heart. Mm-hmm. And that we will see can happen. But what I'm hearing for you is that it's hard for you because you're kind of feeling this grief, I think, for your dad. I heard you say that you feel, the sad and this loss, and that you're also fearful too, I think, about your dad, you know, not being a believer and maybe passing away and you not being able to have that opportunity or that assurance to know that he's going to heaven. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. So what I would say is, yeah, approach your dad and I think be brave and have that conversation, because if your dad's going to be brave with you and have that conversation, what I would advise is be that listening ear. You don't want to be pushing back saying, Dad, I don't really want to talk about this. I think it's really selfish of you to do this. I mean, he's wanting to process with you where he's at the end of toward the end of his life. And so I think just learning to be that listening ear and see what you can hear and learn from him so that you can try and offer some kind of comfort for him and see what his needs are.
JJ, okay. What are you thinking?
Yeah, I love that advice. I would also add, you know, Brandon, if you can share with your dad your heart's desire to whatever time you have remaining with him, that you guys can work on having the best possible relationship. And I don't know how close you guys have been over the years, but it sounds like part of why this is so hard for you is that you wish that you guys were closer to the point that he would see value in wanting to stay alive, even if his partner died, that he would see value in wanting to stay alive because he has a good relationship with you. And I think you said a brother or siblings. So I would encourage you to express that, not in a directive way. You're not allowed to take your life because it would be too painful for me. But instead, from the perspective of, Dad, I'm so glad that you want to have this conversation. I want us to, with whatever time we have remaining together on this earth, I want us to work on our relationship. I want us to share openly. I want us to be able to enjoy our time together. I want you to be able to, you know, come over and spend time with the grandkids or be bring them over or whatever the scenario is, right? But to express, like Mark was saying, listen to his desires, but also to express what's your heart's desire as far as the relationship with him. Can you, again, to borrow Mark's words, can you have the courage to share that without any guarantee that it's going to be reciprocated?
Mm-hmm. Brandon, you pointed out that you also feel like you might need therapy for the rest of your life, and that's a daunting proposition that you might need that much help too. Bringing that in humility to your dad, because depression often runs in families. Dad, I've been struggling lately, and I think I need to do something about it. Brandon, we have the Emotional Freedom Workshop Intensive, which will take place online on June 1st. And we have family members who attend it together. Sometimes they get on computers in separate rooms, but they sign up together. They participate in some ways together. And so bringing your humility to your dad that you feel overwhelmed with life at times, and would he join you in this Emotional Freedom Intensive? Or would he allow you to connect him with a counselor, even though you and your brother have offered to help him before, taking it up another level to offer specific professional help? Maybe we'll have a chance of getting through this time. I want to also leave you with that how the plan B that you might have to involve the authorities if his partner passes away and you believe he's going to truly follow through on that suicide threat, especially if he has lethal means accessible to him, and even just medication that he can overdose on could possibly be those lethal means. And if he's ever attempted in the past, not just threatened, but also attempted, we know that the rate of suicidal ideation has grown so much over the past 10 years. And at all ages, people are experiencing suicidal ideation. And so taking it seriously like you are, thank you for being a good son to your father, who you're willing to take extra steps to be able to help him. So be prepared that you may have to call 911 and they could do a wellness check on your dad if you think he's moving beyond just threats.
But explore if that's actually what he means. When he says, I don't want to live anymore, is he actually threatening suicide, or is he just telling you about something that's going on internally inside himself, right? Is it just like this hopelessness and the sadness that he's feeling when he makes that statement?
It's a good point.
So clarify.
We differentiate by calling one morbid thinking. I want to die. I ask God to take me from this world. I'm ready for heaven. Versus suicidal thinking, which is I'm considering doing something to actively end my life.
Because it could just be more of a wanting to give up rather than I'm going to take my life.
Mm-hmm. That's a very good distinction. Brandon, we're going to send you a book, Living Strong and Finishing Well, which is by Dr. Dave Stoop. You might read it first and then share it with your dad. And we thank you so much for calling. We're going to check in here with Denise before we get to the break. Denise is calling from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania on Sirius XM. Denise, we only have a minute, but we want to start off with your question, and then we'll get to more details after the break. How can we help you today?
Well, I would like some assistance with how to move on following the discovery of my husband's extramarital affair for decades. He has done some things, and I'm confident that he is not involved anymore. But I struggle with flashbacks of thinking what he did and what I missed. And he tells me he's moved on, but I need help, and I would like him to understand my emotions and be able to express his emotions.
Denise, those issues that you're describing, the thoughts that you're having and emotions you're feeling, I just want to tell you how completely normal that is for a woman in your position to be feeling and thinking, and that your husband is struggling to understand it. We can help, and JJ West is just the person to talk to about this. We'll be right back.
We'd love to hear from you. If you have a question or a comment, call toll-free 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. Before we go back to our call with Denise, I want to remind you and celebrate with you that we are over halfway to meeting our $400,000 matching gift. We have until May 31st to be able to access those funds, and we do so by your donation getting doubled. It then releases that same amount, doubling your gift to New Life, and we are so cautious with the donations that we receive, trying to put them to the best use possible. So thank you to all of you who have gotten us to that point, halfway to the match. And we ask and invite others to do so as well if God nudges you. I know that I was a listener for a long time to New Life before I ever gave. And one day there just was a turning point where I felt God's nudge. Now is the time to become a part of the New Life family. I have never regretted it, especially with all those goodies we get in the mail. And you can make your gift at newlife.com/donate. You can text us the word match to 28950. Or you can call us at 800-NEW-LIFE. And when you make a donation of at least $100 or more, we'll be able to send you our just-released Every Woman's Bible, which was edited by Misty Arterburn. Fantastic insights in there about women in the Bible and the Scripture in general. You don't want to miss out on that. And so we'll go back now to Denise. Denise, you were describing that your husband had an affair for quite some time. He's done a lot of work on himself, but he might be missing out some of that empathy that you need for what you're going through. You might have even been saying he's kind of nudging you. You got to get past this because he's done so much work already. Will you clarify that and pick up the story there?
Yes, he has done a lot of work, and we've done a lot together, but he just can't express himself emotionally or say what he's feeling. And he said, I've just never been like that. And then I try to make him understand how I feel, and things like when I walk into a store and I grocery store and I see her, and it just, things like that. Or in my house, I'm very uncomfortable because she was in my house. Mm. It just comes on like I'm perfectly fine, and then all of a sudden I just get, you know, very, very upset, and I don't know how to get rid of mm-hmm. that part of it. I feel good. I'm at peace with myself. I feel very confident that I've done, you know, what I can, but I would just like to. And we're okay, but I would just like to bring him along and be connected. I feel like we're driving on parallel roads with a median in between.
Denise, when did you discover about this affair?
A year and a half ago, actually. Mm-hmm. Actually, two of our daughters discovered it through phone contact, and so that's another issue because it's really affected them, because then they had to tell me, and I almost lost the relationship with one of our daughters because she was telling me something's not right, you know, dad just isn't whatever, and I'd say, oh, come on, he would never do that, he's just busy, and the type of job that he has is such that he can be unpredictable because he has to go get this person to sign. He's got meetings. He's got, you know, whatever. But I'm grateful. I'm so thankful to God that's been restored, and you know, we're good. But there's certainly a lot of anxiety and fearfulness there with our daughters too.
Wow.
Two of the three, because the third one doesn't know, and that's the other issue, is he doesn't want anybody to know.
Mm. Denise, the depth of this betrayal is so significant here, because it's not like somebody who you didn't know or you don't know. This is somebody who sounds like was a family friend who was coming into the home, and this was all happening behind your back. And so you're right, there's been this parallel road that's been happening, and for a while there's been a median. It, you know, you may have thought all of these years that you guys were close and there was no median between you, but the truth is that there was this invisible median that he was separating himself for you, and you didn't know what's happening on the other side of the freeway. And now all of a sudden you've reached a point and the divide is low, that the divide is still there, but you can see across now, and you need to know what has happened here. Have you guys done any kind of affair recovery work?
We have gone to a couple's intensive week, not through, you know, New Life Live, but through someone. We've gone to that, we've gone to counseling.
Did they use affair recovery principles, though? Well, sometimes it's known as betrayal recovery principles. Okay, so that's what you need. There's a particular type of therapy that you need. When you go through a betrayal like this, you need betrayal recovery approach to this, because everything that you're thinking and you're feeling is entirely normal. Your world has been completely upside down, and... him trying to keep everything in the dark is parallel to what has happened in the affair, because all of this stuff happened where you didn't know about it, and now he's still trying to keep it there. And that's an indication that he's not really taken the steps to want to move close toward you to heal your heart. He doesn't understand the depth of the pain and the betrayal that you have been through.
Denise, we're going to take more time with you after the break, and you'll hear from JJ West as well. And so hold tight. And Harley, we're going to get to you as well, so hang on. So folks, after this short break, we will come back and further discuss what Denise can do next.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Club New Life supporters who give a monthly donation because they want to continue to offer help and hope in these very, very difficult places. To find out more about Club New Life, you can go to our website, newlife.com, or call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now, if you're new to us, we drop an episode every weekday. We would love it if you would rate or write a review, which helps more people discover help and hope, and helps us share wisdom with as many people as possible. Now, let's listen to our counselors as they help people walk through life's hardest places.
We're glad you joined us for New Life Live. To be a part of the program, call 1-800-229-3000. Now back to New Life Live.
We are back on New Life Live. We've been talking with Denise, who is describing a situation in which her husband is partially participating in recovery from a decades-long affair, but there are still some very concerning behaviors that are keeping Denise and her daughters stuck in the pain of what has taken place. And I'm going to invite JJ to speak next to you, Denise.
Thank you.
First, Denise, I want to echo Mark's statement. I'm so sorry that this has happened to you. The pain is really unbelievable. You know, you started off with the question, how do I get over this? My husband is asking me, like, hey, you need to get over this. I've gotten past it. I would have to argue that a year and a half is not sufficient time to, quote unquote, get over this. This is a huge thing. Most people will tell you that it takes at least 18 to 24 months just for things to start to feel normal and safe again. Not that we've healed, not that everything is well, but just that the aftershocks of the initial trauma have subsided enough to feel like, okay, I can survive this. I can move forward. I haven't done the work to heal, but I'm at least at a place where I can recognize that I can do that. You're just on the cusp of that. So I don't want you to feel like you've dropped the ball in some way. You're not doing enough work. This is the timetable that we're talking about right now. You're on track. Okay.
Okay.
The second thing is what Mark talked about in terms of in order to heal, you have to really work on some betrayer trauma. You have to work through the trauma that you encountered. And by the way, it wasn't just you. You primarily, but also your daughters have been betrayed by your husband. And he has to own that. He has to acknowledge that he has so upturned your world and their world that it's made a tremendous impact on their and your understanding of reality, but also has impacted your relationships, right? You talked about how your relationship with one of your daughters was strained after the information finally came out, because you had for so long defended him, right? And said, no, it's not possible. He could never do that, right? So he has to own the fact that his decisions impacted your relationships with your relationship with your daughters. That's going to be important. And then the other piece is, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And there is a third daughter who he doesn't want to know. She doesn't live locally, and he doesn't want her to know, because he said, why ruin another family?
Except that it's eventually going to come out. Okay. Uh-huh. It will eventually come out. There's no doubt about it. It will eventually come out. She will then have to deal with why she was left out of the loop. Mm-hmm. And until it comes out, the other two sisters, as well as yourself, have to be so careful about what we say, how we say it when we're around her, so that we don't let his secret out. That's not fair
to the three of you. And I feel like I'm being deceptive as well. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm deceiving and lying and, you know, just...
Absolutely.
And that's not me either.
And Denise, he's involving you in the same type of behavior that he engaged in the affair, and now he's making you part of this, right? I think it was Einstein who said you can't fix your problems with the same mindset that created them. And going through affair recovery is not about getting over it. It's about getting through it. And you really need him to be somebody who's taking care of your heart. And I don't hear that he's taking responsibility and taking care of your heart, because I think taking care of your heart is somebody who has radical ownership, somebody who calls a meeting or goes to meet separately with each of your daughters and says, hey, this is what's happened. I've done this. I've hurt your mom. I have wounded her. I've wounded you guys. You haven't known about it. And I just need to tell you what's happened. I need to ask for your forgiveness, and I need to lay out the plan of what I'm going to do to help your mom heal and win her heart back and win your guys' trust back. And I don't hear that he's done that. And so I think that he is he's still kind of in this mindset of you know, now that you know, how long is it going to take for you to get over it? And I'd love for you to go to the Restore workshop. It's July 12th through the 14th in Washington, D.C. Restore is for women who have been sexually betrayed. And at that workshop, we're going to help you understand that everything that you're going through, all the thoughts and your feelings are totally normal right now. And we're going to show you what you should be asking, if not demanding, of your husband for the relationship to heal. And we're going to give you a pathway for healing from that too.
Denise, I want you to know that I'm basically one of your daughters, meaning my family went through a struggle with infidelity, and my parents decided to tell all of us children about it. And it was one of the most awful conversations we have ever had. It was certainly destabilizing, and yet long term, it was so healing. Because it did a couple of things. First, it showed all of us kids, me in particular, that we are all so imperfect. So now with my major mistakes I have made in my life, my parents are very approachable because of the kind of forced humility of going through that conversation. Mm-hmm. And I have since learned, Denise, that children of a parent who has been unfaithful are twice as likely to either be victims of infidelity or to perpetrate infidelity themselves. And I think it's both a spiritual inheritance that's passed on, but it's kind of like alcoholism. There may be a genetic component to it, a modeling component to it. And so even if children are not aware of it, they are still affected by it. And breaking through that cover-up and deception, it is hurtful to a family, but long-term it is not harmful, especially if you all continue in the recovery process. And I have, until my mom's death and now with my dad, I have such a close relationship with my parents because we can be completely honest with each other that we have awful, embarrassing, shameful mistakes in our lives, but we've loved each other through it. We're going to send you Intimate Deception, Dr. Sherry Keffer's book, which will help explain a lot more of this. And we just have heard
you. I've read that book.
Excellent.
I
okay.
have that book.
Then instead,
and I wanted him to read it.
Yes,
read it.
He should.
I've given it to him because I said, this would help you understand me.
It will. And if you already have that, then we're going to send instead Worthy of Her Trust, because there are elements to his recovery that he is missing. I'm questioning whether or not he's really in the sustained victory, the ongoing group from Every Man's Battle, because at that intensive weekend, they sure learn what to do. But our men need to be in an ongoing process of support, because I hear he doesn't want to upset other families.
No.
He doesn't want to wreck your daughter's family. He has some good and reasonable motivation there, but he needs the courage to fully face this. So we'll send Worthy of Her Trust for you and your husband to read so you can know what you can expect and what you can ask for from him. So, Denise, thank you so much for your call. We'll be praying for you, your family, and your daughters. And now we'll go to Harley, who has been patiently holding on, calling from Knoxville, Tennessee. This is a first-time call. We love first-time calls. Harley, welcome to the show. How can we help you?
Yes, I was just wondering, the faith that I was raised in was a very restrictive faith and, you know, very Bible-believing. And one of the things that the preacher always preached on was Seventh Commandment, is, I shall not commit adultery. And he explained it to us as young people, if you get married, you get a divorce, you remarry, you're committing adultery. And so you can't do that and make it to heaven. Unfortunately, after I married my high school sweetheart, found ourselves in the situation where she wanted out, so we got a divorce. She moved on with her life really, really quickly, and then I eventually met somebody, we fell in love, and we got married. But now the question I have in my head is, am I committing adultery? Is this going to keep me out of heaven, or am I okay?
Harley, thank you for that question. It's a question we get from time to time here, because that worry of, if I've committed this sin of adultery, how does it affect my salvation? And so I'm going to start with you, JJ.
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of things in that list of commandments that your former pastor referred to that we are guilty of, especially when we understand it through the lens of how Jesus taught, that it's not just behavior, but it's also what's going on in our hearts. And so if I'm guilty of lust, I'm guilty of adultery. If I'm guilty of hatred, I'm guilty of murder, right? Like there's a much higher bar. And the thing is, none of those things keep us out of heaven if we've accepted Christ's sacrifice on the cross for our sin. None of those things keep us out of heaven. But all of those things keep us out of heaven if we haven't accepted Christ's sacrifice on the cross for our sin. So it's not that, oh, I've lived in such a way that I earn my spot in heaven. It's that I've accepted Christ making my way into heaven for me. So anyway, I hear the music. We'll probably come back after the break.
Do hold on, Harley, because we'll draw out some more details and help you a bit more. And dealing with both the spiritual and the emotional side of what our listeners are going through, it's all part and parcel. They're all connected. Our spiritual concerns affect us emotionally. They even affect us physically. And so when we're living in that cognitive dissonance of, am I sinning, takes a toll on us. We'll come back after this.
To find out more information about New Life or to order any of the resources mentioned on today's program, call 1-800-NEW-LIFE. Now back to New Life Live.
Welcome back to New Life Live. We'll return to our call with Harley in just a minute, but because we have Every Man's Battle Intensive coming up on May 17th, I first want to invite JJ to speak to female listeners who don't know how to talk with their husbands about attending, but also need them to attend. JJ, what would you tell them?
Yeah, I would say start with sharing your heart, sharing the pain that you're experiencing, sharing the fear that you might be feeling. sharing even your desire for restoration, for reconciliation. Obviously, if that's accurate, you don't want to say something that's not true. But if your desire is that he would, in fact, get the help he needs in order for your relationship to be restored, share that as well. But also share that you're looking for tangible evidence of change in his life and in his heart. And that has to be more than just words. That can't just be these empty promises of, I swear I'll never do it again. I'm so sorry, but I've changed. I've done, I'm going to do differently. No, I need to see tangible evidence of that. And to kind of go back to something Mark had said earlier, you know, our best thinking got us here, right? We can't, to misquote Einstein, right? Like, we can't solve our problem with the same approach that we created the problem. My best thinking got me here. So I really do need to reach outside to others. And so going to an Every Man's Battle intensive allows me to go and hear from others, listen to others, learn from others, so that I'm not trying to fix my broken self with my broken self.
Ladies, many of our men who do attend admit they wouldn't have if it hadn't been asked for and required by their wives.
Yes.
And so your husband may need that nudge from you and may even need to know what that firm boundary is that you're drawing if he will not attend. And that is a loving thing to do to help your husband move into recovery. Thank you for that, JJ. And I think you had more to say. Harley had called us concerned whether or not the sin of adultery means the loss of salvation. JJ, will you keep going?
Yeah, so, you know, this came up a lot all through Jesus' time on earth. The religious leaders were constantly trying to trap Jesus. Oh, we've got him now. He can't squeeze his way out of this one. Right, we're gonna trap him in this. And one of those times was, of course, with the woman caught in adultery. And they drag her into the courtyard, throw her down in front of him, and they say, the law says that such a person should be stoned to death. What do you say? Right, they've got him trapped because either he's light on the law, on the Bible, or he's ungracious. And of course, his response is beautiful, in which he says, you know, he who is without sin cast the first stone. Right, we're all guilty of sin. And then he says to the woman, after everyone's left, he says, where are your accusers? There are none. He says, neither do I accuse you, or neither do I condemn you, but go and sin no more. So when we're talking about these questions of, is this the sin that's going to keep me out of heaven? It's really the wrong question to ask. The question is, one, have I accepted Christ's gift of salvation that he purchased solely by himself, not any addition from me? And then two, has that acceptance and that relationship with God caused a change in my life where I want to live away from sin? I want to trust God with my life. So that's, I would say, shift the conversation away from, oh, is this behavior the thing that's going to keep me out of heaven? And to, where is my heart? Is my heart to walk with God, or is my heart to walk on my own?
Yeah, I think you're 100% right here, JJ. I think it's a very legalistic mindset. And again, that's the way the Pharisees thought. And we don't want to flip all the way to the other side and be this permissive liberal mindset. But the whole point of Jesus coming to die on the cross was to let us know that we cannot earn our salvation. There's nothing that we can do. When you break one part of the law, you break all of the law. So even if this was the one part of the law that you kept, if you break something else, you break all of the law. And that's the chasm between us and Jesus. And so, and this is why Jesus said those things about, even if you look at somebody, it's the equivalent of doing of committing adultery if you look at somebody lustfully. And so I think the key part is go and sin no more. Go and try and live your life. If you love me, you will obey my commands, is what Jesus said. And so if you receive the gift of salvation, you will go forth and you'll try and live your life to the best way it can be. So that's what I'd offer you here, Harley.
Harley, please engage in a self-evaluation with God's help as well about whether or not your anxiety of salvation might be, in fact, directing you to do more work on this. Perhaps you haven't done a full confession, Or maybe you haven't made amends to the people that were hurt by your actions. And so sometimes our guilt that can just get us stuck in fear, it's actually a nudge of God to take action because he wants more healing for us this side of heaven. It is so intimidating to know that all sin merits death. All sin merits the loss of heaven. And so, as the gentlemen are saying, it's only by the gift of salvation that any of us get out of it. But we can get out of it if we'll confess and then take the steps to fully repent of what we have done. Harley, thank you for the courage you have had to call. And I'm going to send you 100 Days to Freedom from Fear and Anxiety, a daily devotional that will just usher in more peace and more understanding for you with the fear that you have been feeling. We're going to take a question from someone who wasn't able to call in live but wanted to get a question answered on air. And you folks can do the same by going to New Life. You can leave us our newlife.com website. You can leave us with a question that we'll answer live on air. This question comes from Terry in Kentucky. How do I handle my husband stopping kidney dialysis? It seems like a suicide wish. The background information, Terry says, I'm Terry in Kentucky, the wife of a man who has stage 4 kidney disease and is considering stopping dialysis. And everyone tells me it's his decision. I'm not trying to influence that decision, although it seems to me like a suicide wish. He's only been on dialysis for 6 months. There are things he could do to help himself feel better, but he seems to have given up. He's never been compliant with his medical care, and it seems as though he doesn't care. He won't fight. We're both 69 years old. Your thoughts on this matter would be helpful. Mark, you have actually experience in this area.
I do. I actually, prior to being a therapist, I ran the largest hemodialysis clinic in the United States, and then I ran the largest home dialysis program in the United States. And so, yeah, I mean, I think stopping dialysis is a very personal decision because it's not the same as suicide, because when you're on dialysis, you have machines that are mimicking the function of your body. And if you don't get dialysis, you end up dying quickly. So it's kind of the equivalent of somebody stopping a breathing machine for somebody that is keeping them going. And so it's a very hard life to be on dialysis, especially in-center hemo. You need it 3 times a week. You're exhausted. When you go and do it, it's draining afterwards. And it's just a really, really hard life. And so when somebody comes to make that decision to say that I want to stop doing this, it's really that they're just kind of accepting the limitations of their body. But it can be hard, especially if you have abandonment issues and the family members are left dealing with grief and the loss of it. And so I think what I would say to Terry here is I can totally understand why this is your experience, that it feels like he's giving up. But to just sit there, try and put yourself in your husband's shoes, try and have a really honest conversation of what it feels like for him to have to go through something so hard, and then just process through what letting go together and doing that well would look like.
And in a separate conversation, Terry, I would ask you to share your heart with your husband. Ask if he can be a listener to you, and maybe even in the comfort circle. Let him know how fearful you are of what might take place if he stops dialysis. And hopefully through that, you can come to a better understanding of each other's hearts. I'm going to leave you with Proverbs 24:11. Hold back those struggling toward the slaughter. Rescue those being led away to death. And we at New Life would love to help you with that.
Thanks so much for listening. We hope something you heard will help you live in freedom today. If this content was helpful for you, we would love it if you'd take a minute, leave us a review, post about it, and rate it. Remember, we have resources and workshops online for you as you continue your journey. Go to newlife.com and find out more information. And thank you for being part of the New Life community. We know that God desires all of us to live a life of wholeness and healing. And we're so glad that you're here.